State Representative Techie Chan of Quincy is back for another Techie Talk. How are you, Techie?
Doing good, Joe. I'm seeing the office. We had a formal session yesterday, and we have a formal session today, and we're hopefully having a caucus actually scheduled for 2 o'clock as well. So we're back live after school vacation week.
Yes, absolutely. And thankfully, the weather is cooperating just beautifully right now.
Well, yes, except for the water main break near my house that we found out on Monday. Thankfully, DPW was able to get on top of it and after some short period of water shut off, because obviously it's a water main break, they do have to shut off the water. I mean, things were restored. So I'm very appreciative of Quincy DPW and the water department coming out to address it. For those who don't know, I live on a dirt road. So there's no jackhammering. It involves digging. I live near marshland, so the water had someplace to go. Yeah, no, it's like everybody else. There was a couple of water main breaks in the city, including mine. The city was trying to get to the, between the freezing, the cooling, the settling, the warming up. I was a little surprised that my water main didn't break sooner, especially that crazy ice storm we had on the 16th, the 15th, 16th of February, where my road became I live on a road called Meadow Brook. It became a brook.
Yeah, it was just a mess. Absolutely. It was, and then it all, like you say, froze solid like concrete.
So again, a little surprised it didn't happen sooner. I hope everybody had a fun and safe school vacation week last week, and we're back into it.
Yes, and I know that we've been talking a long time about waiting and waiting and waiting for the Joint Rules Committee, and it's happened.
Yeah, we the House and Senate passed rules that Senate did it before school break. We just did it yesterday. The joint rules are up for negotiation between the two branches, but the House rules are now set. There are significant changes, most significant changes in rules in my lifetime. I've operated under the current rule systems as a staffer for my first days here in 95. So I've always lived under a very specific schedule. You're all aware that this job gives you a lot of flexibility, but on the flip side, you're stuck with this real rigid schedule when you can and cannot be away for long periods of time. This does not include having to campaign for re-election. So we the House's proposal is moving the first year of the 2 year session, which is the first year we are now, to the first Wednesday of December as the as before we recess for the holiday. This is a change from being the first was it third Wednesday, basically the week before Thanksgiving. The Wednesday before that as the last day before the holiday break. Obviously, the recess break will still continue informal sessions. We talk about how much stuff we get done during informal sessions. And then this 2 year, the second half of the 2 year session, which will be 2026, the formal session will continue to end on July 31st. However, any outstanding conference committees will be roll called, and we could be summoned back anytime between that and the end of the formal session year. Formal, I'm sorry, formal session 2026 before swearing in day. So there's a bit of a calendar adjustment, which doesn't ensure us any advance notice about when something's going to happen. And there's some advantages. Like I said, we have some flexibility in this job. The disadvantage because the speaker summons when we summon, we come back. And it isn't like, oh, we're going to be here, on Tuesday. It doesn't work like that. For example, yesterday was a scheduled session. But they scheduled a session on the fly yesterday for today, Wednesday.
Right, so you have to be available.
You have to be available. I took a little short break from vacation and I come back early on my own dime. So this is not unusual. Electeds do take time off and whatever we can, but it's not uncommon for people to cut short the vacation. And I was talking to some folks in the chamber yesterday. A couple of people had to cancel their vacation plans.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. This is a popular time to go away for sure. And unlike the Senate, you and the House have to be in person to vote, right?
That is, yep, we talked about this last time. We are continuing to have in-person voting in the House rules, and we are now requiring in-person attendance for committee meetings. So while the virtual option is available, you are going to be graded, for lack of a better term, in-person hearings for House members. So the House members have put a notice That is the case, and we are going to be taking attendance. That being said, we are very aware that unlike chairs, myself, which I hope to be a chair again, they members do have more than one committee, and they do have conflicting schedules. We do overlap hearings because we have essentially five hearing spaces, six if we count Garner Auditorium. And you could find yourself as a member on four committees, of which all four committees could be holding a hearing on the same day.
Yeah, that presents a scheduling issue, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so you guys imagine that. You have four hearings in building, you gotta try to get all four. And we're requiring mandatory attendance. So, well, I'm sorry, attendance accounting. So, members are going to have to jump around, try to get from hearing to hearing to attend. And the chairs will take notes of their length of time they're in the hearing, but being very understanding that House members would do that. Senators also have a lot of extra committees as well, but the majority of senators only attend the meeting they're chairing. Unlike House chairs, we only have one committee to oversee, which is our chair. So the Senate does not have this rule. It is a proposal from the House to the Senate on the joint rule that senators will also be taking attendance. I'm not going to say any names, but there has been some negative feedback coming back from certain senators.
Yes, I have read and heard about that. Yes.
Yeah, the idea of showing up for work does not seem to appeal to senators. So, as you can tell, the negotiation between the House and Senate is very intense on the joint rules regarding greater accountability and transparency, of which the feeling of the speaker is that we are doing that. We're taking attendance. Attendance will be a public record. All votes on the executive sessions will be essentially roll call votes from here on in. It shares on how to manage said roll call votes, which would be part of the public record. We are proposing that the House and Senate bifurcate responsibilities. Currently, the House chair handles all the scheduling, handles all document control, handles some bill summaries, including senators. We provide a conduit for services to agencies for members, including senators. We do a lot of redrafts, including Senate redrafts. So the attention of the House is that, well, you think you've been talking about for almost 8 years about you want to go off on your own. We are, but you're not taking our resources with you.
Right. Interesting. So they'll need to create a whole kind of new process to deal with the things that the House helps them with right now.
That has been underappreciated by the media. The Globe loves to kick the crap out of us, but they overlook the fact that we do, but the majority of labor. And if my co-chair decides he wants to move a certain direction on a Senate bill, we will help the senator out on helping that bill get to the point where the Senate chair would like to do.
Yeah, I was not aware of that either, Taggy. It's interesting.
Yeah, and as a longtime guy that knows how to draft stuff, I personally will participate in trying to help a senator out. That is going to end.
Okay. All right. Some changes coming for sure then.
Yeah, and another major change is we basically changed the concept of Joint Rule 10. We've talked about the show in the past that we have a deadline of bills reported by committee on Joint Rule 10. It's a little bit tricky situation now that a committee that holds a hearing needs to report that bill out after the hearing is over in 60 days. If it's not reported in 60 days, we get asked for an extension of 30 more days. If no action is taken, it appears it's a little tricky at this point what happens because it normally goes out as ought not to pass, but it looks like it's going to put in study orders if you do not take action within a 60-day plus a potential 30-day extension. We do have a conventional Joint Rule 10. I think the date is the first Wednesday of March, with the second half 2-year session. At that point, it's all the late filed bills. All the late filed bills will be rolling in that 36-day revolving door scenario. This will force committee chairs to move on bills faster. And we are going to follow the Senate's lead. The Senate wants to be able to control Senate bills and vote on Senate bills. The House votes on House bills and release House bills, which means that the House chair is responsible for managing the House members regarding votes and scheduling the votes separate from the Senate chair. Just like we talk about bifurcation of work, that we're just basically we're just going to separate and move along. It's a little bit confusing whether we have joint hearings. I'm unclear about that step.
Oh, okay. Stay tuned for that then.
Yeah, I'm still a little scratching head about that because the Committee rules will be only for the House members. The rules I set, which will be voted on by the House members, are the rules that will operate on our side, essentially full bifurcation. So the rolling, so-called rolling deadline after hearings on bills report does result of bills coming out quicker, but it creates an interesting scheduling challenge for membership because of
Right.
the attendance.
Yeah, I see that. Okay. It's gonna have to be ironed out then.
It's going to be a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of work because we're simply not taking people's attendance. That really shapes things up. And I do notice that the rules does not say I cannot take senators' attendances, by the way.
Oh, look at the smile on your face for that.
Well, I've been around a long time with these rules, and if they want to play games, let's just say you have to be here long enough to know how to play these games.
Okay, all right. So we'll be able to let folks know on this program next week about your chairmanship, right?
Yeah, 2 p.m. today. We're actually going to know before the audience will, because 2 p.m. is the caucus. Our anticipation in the building, standing on pins and needles with everyone around here about their committee assignments. And as I repeat over and over again to people ask, for the first time in a very long time, I can't predict.
You say that again, Techie? We didn't hear you.
For the first time in a very long time, I cannot predict what's going to happen to me. I just have some clues about what's going to happen. Like I have a general sense of what's going on. But no, not this time. And this is with Ron. So, as we talked before in the past, there's a lot of chairmanships open, a lot of very good vice chairmanships open. The membership is very young in seniority. This leadership team is going to have to take risks on new members, risk on even current chairs, whether they can handle higher level responsibility, especially on an accelerated schedule.
So they'll be looking to senior members like yourself for help.
Yes, I'm not too concerned, as you can hear from the sound of my voice, about the new schedule. I can figure out how to manage things. It's not like I don't know how to pivot and adjust on a schedule. But the new members, particularly more complex committees, the committee I don't have to stick by the chair, but I mean, as we talked before, it's about licensing, lottery, racetracks, car franchising, warranties, lemon laws, AI, intellectual property. Telemarketing, board of registration, board of building regulators, elevator inspectors. I mean, this is a very complex committee. And I was preloaded with knowledge in my staffing days, which helped out a ton. But the idea that you can come to this committee, for example, and just walk in and be able to handle 250 bills, of which nothing talks to each other. The learning curve is very steep.
Yeah, talk about multitasking. Yikes. You need a experienced staff, I'm sure, to help you with that.
Yeah, and that you're right. The staffing is very becomes even more important because they're going to be working at an accelerated pace. And I mean, let's be honest about it. People take for granted, somewhat folks like myself who's been around a little while and have a very large, diversified base of knowledge that not everyone appreciates, nor they always sometimes understand.
And it brings to mind what's happening at the federal level right now, and all the changes that are happening with a lot of experience being rushed out the door.
Well, the government institutional knowledge, we've run this problem, of course, when we do early retirement programs here. I've been around for about, I think, six of different early retirement programs to try to cut the budget. And it's always resulted in the same thing, where you lose so much institutional knowledge that getting services done becomes a nightmare. And the federal government's going to be facing the same thing with mass resignations, terminations, and people closing on retirement. The vast majority of people that Probably, I'm going to gamble that most people taking the early buyout at the federal level were already close to retirement age anyway.
Yeah, probably true.
So they figured, not a bad deal, and they're going to be able to get closer and closer to retiring early. And like I said, it's post-COVID has changed how we perceive retirement.
Yep, that's absolutely true. Yeah, folks re-examine their priorities, and do things that they might not have done otherwise, just because of the brevity of what could be.
Well, nothing like mortality to rethink your twilight years.
It's very true. Yeah.
So I'm sure some of those government employees are not looking for maximum retirement benefit. They're probably looking to just good enough, and then maybe take a part-time job or find something else.
This is it. If they're in their early 60s, they're still plenty young to do something else, right?
Exactly. That's what I think is my personal opinion, where things going on, because I do see that at my level. people are not looking for max retirement. They're trying to get into a zone where they believe they can comfortably live, and then, and then try to enjoy the years because you just don't know what's going to kill you.
Right. Yeah. To have a balance, right? A balance of quality of life. Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, including myself. I'm far from retirement age, despite my appearances.
Now you look like just a kid, Tacky.
But I mean, I'm in the same pension program as 99.9% of all pensioners in the state system, and I'm in that same program as all of them. And I look at my own private retirement funds and try to figure out, when is the time to jump out too. But I'm still years away. Unless the voters don't like me, then different kind of acceleration.
Oh, I can't imagine that happening.
It's healthy. I'll say again to everyone, definitely get a financial planner. You're never too young to start to have one. And you'll kind of see which way your life would like to be, whether it be 10, 20, 30 years from where you are today. So still, I strongly advise people to look into financial planning for what kind of lifestyle you want to be 20, 30 years from now.
Yeah. Speaking of the federal government, are you doing anything at the state level to, I don't know, prepare or at least assess how government cutbacks would affect the state?
Well, it's really a job issue now, right? You got two levels here. One is the direct assistance we get from the government. Those who may be aware, half of Medicare and Medicaid is paid by the government. So you guys know that as MassHealth. Half of it's federally government paid, half of it's state dollars paid. I mean, there's talk about reform in Washington, D.C. about reforming Medicare. If you start losing services as a Medicare, Medicaid, MassHealth person, there's going to be a strong desire from constituents to backfill those services if the federal government cuts those services. So obviously, if you listen to this and you are concerned about your MassHealth, you should call your congressman and your senator, a U.S. senator, not John Kenan, a U.S.
Right.
senator. And in our case, in Quincy, Stephen Lynch, and let them know that you're very concerned about proposals going on in Washington, D.C. It is one of the largest parts of the federal budget, by far none, now following, so, and after that, Social Security. So and just remind folks, you do pay Social Security in your FICO as well as Medicare. So it's not baseline federal taxes, it's a separate tax that you pay in your payroll. A shared cost between you and your employer, Social Security. So people should be aware that it's a dedicated tax revenue stream, not part, it's not supposed to be part of the baseline federal taxes you pay. So it's you can supplement those programs with baseline federal taxes. So just because you're paying Medicare tax doesn't mean that you can't use federal tax. So we'll see where that takes you. And then there's also the job factor, right? $3.5 billion to $5 billion of biotech research grants have been suspended in Massachusetts. We easily get the lion's share. As you're aware, healthcare is our biggest economic driver. And I have no problem creating some efficiencies, but that's a lot of jobs on the line.
Yeah, and a lot of potential new economic stimulation too, depending on what they discover, what they invent, what they develop.
Yeah, it could set back research. As we learned during COVID, state tax dollars develop a very powerful actually biotech industry. We never realized to say how powerful it was until COVID showed up and realized, oh, our investment not knowingly that there was going to be a disaster, saved lives. We're talking about Moderna in particular, right? So, these investments, do matter in the long term. And if you only think in the short term, well, you could be back in the 1918 flu, and there'll be no way to stop the coronavirus, and it'll just be, continue a high level of death. Because they're using estimates from the 1918 flu to try to guesstimate what COVID was going to do to us. And without our major investments in healthcare and biotech and research, well, could have been much worse. And hindsight's 2020, but we couldn't have predicted the future. Just our investments made sense.
Have you heard of any of the social service agencies, particularly here in Quincy, being impacted by federal cutbacks?
Not yet, but I'm sure they're going to be coming because a lot of that's going to be discretionary funds. The city and the state gets a lot of grant monies that have been suspended. I'm aware that Programs like Equations and Resources through the CDC has also been in suspension mode. A federal judge has ruled that they cannot suspend funds without rationale, because Congress appropriated the money and the job of the president is to execute Congress's will. And that's the testing ground again between the powers of the executive, judicial, and legislative branches. I know that pundits in the media like to create speculations and a bit of fear as a result of the speculations. But you don't know till you know, as I like to say. And you can't anticipate public policy, because where results is bad public policy. So, as you guys all know, I'm a very much believer in the constitutional system, very believer in preserving legislative power, again, the executive branch. Congress, under the Republican leadership, appears thus far to abdicate their responsibilities to President Trump. I will tell you, once those military base cuts start coming in Republican states, abdication of power results in constituent job losses. Constituent job losses results in non-reelection. So that's why you have two-year elected officials, not four or six, particularly in the House of Representatives. The founding fathers were correct. Short-term elected House members results in you need to pay more attention in smaller geographic constituencies from consequences associated with the executive branch.
So there will be pushback for sure if that happens. Yep.
Oh well, nothing. You think elected officials like to see pink slips, especially government employee pink slips in large quantities, and what it does to various communities regarding local economic development? One less job means one less person buying something off of Main Street.
Right. Yeah, in many rural communities, a military base is the lone economic driver.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because they provide civilian jobs as well as purchase regional product to supply the military base. And even if they cut the staff of military base, let's say by 10%, put aside the unemployment increase in that geographic zone, there's also consumption reduction by 10%. And Virginia and DC are going to see, in particular, going to see massive unemployment increases because of reduction in the federal workforce. And we're actually very low on GDP and government, federal government impact on GDP, because we're so large. And quite frankly, we are very wealthy compared to everybody else on the planet, except for very small European nations like Luxembourg, which has higher per capita than we do, but it's also Luxembourg. It's a teeny tiny country, people.
Or Singapore probably.
Yeah, Singapore is another tiny country, right? So, except for, some of those really small countries, I mean, the United States is still a very wealthy country. So, as a result, government G influence in GDP is well under 25%. Yeah, other countries is closer to 40%. But I mean, they could, under cuts in Washington, D.C., they could reduce the government influence in GDP as much as 5% if they want to. Just government workforce reduction and non-investment in our local industries, whether it be research and development, healthcare investment, educational investment, human service investment. I mean, any of those type of investments will reduce. And, even government contract reduction. Like, we still have Raytheon here. And, the government contract on military spending will go down. I think we're going to try to cut 10% plus on military
10
spending.
percent? Wow, okay.
I think they're going to try to cut it because it was almost $900 billion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, almost 900 billion. So I think we're going to try to shave 10% off. I really believe that. And that means they're going to go after firing a lot of employees, plus, terminating government contracts.
Right. Wow. Okay. Times are a changing, that's for sure.
Well, the general consensus from a lot of people in economy world, economics, believes you can reduce the government deficit, but you can't reduce it. You should not reduce it. You can, but you should not reduce it in 1 year. It should be a multi-year plan on gradual deficit reduction, meaning spending less, finding new revenue, and try to do the long-term balancing act reduction, barring a 9/11 scenario, right? Where national security is at risk. So this is a little bit different, where the Trump administration is trying to do a huge $1.7 trillion reduction on a $6.7 trillion budget, with a discretionary spending of $1.7 trillion. And everything is a fixed cost. No one's talking about the fact that the House and Senate has passed another continuing spending resolution. The president is a master of distraction. And one of the most important bills passing through Congress right now is a continuing spending resolution, which the president has allotted to the Senate version. I'm not sure how the House version is going to fly with the president, but it's out there. And, there are legit people in Congress, Republican parties, looking to cut the $2 trillion Medicare/Medicaid. Again, call your federal delegation, Senator Warren, Senator Markey, and Congressman Lynch in our little world, about your opinion on the matter. And if you're expecting the state to backfill something that's a third of our budget almost, it's going to be very difficult to backfill tax dollars.
Can we talk about, I know you have a strong background in energy policy, Jackie, and lately the discussion's been around the natural gas utilities and the rates. The DPU, I guess, is asking them to reduce rates 10%. Is that right?
Yeah, so natural gas bill really comes in two components where you come right down to it. I mean, there's more than one, but we're going to make it really simple. You have a distribution rate, which is the utility NSTAR natural grid in the state that controls the pipes that carries the gas to your home. You have large transmission lines, which we won't talk about, that's not relevant here. And then you have the physical gas itself. And the gas comes out of Tennessee, and actually, believe it or not, some of it comes out of Canada. When we talked about tariffs last time, and the impact on natural gas users who may find themselves a 10% increase in their gas bill. So, as a result of tariffs. So, what does that mean? Well, you have basically your bill is basically composed of two points. I'm going to keep this simple. And the distribution rate is NSTAR and Natural Grid. They do not control the price of natural gas on the other side. The actual physical gas that's your house. We do have this thing called the energy efficiency charge. That is relatively new. Historically, the energy efficiency charge is located on your electric bill. Look at your electric bill as a 0.00025 energy efficiency charge. It pays for things like mass save. It's all been on there for since 1999. However, there's a hidden charge. Back when the Green Communities Act 1 was passed, in 2008, I think, the created Energy Efficiency Council at the Department of Energy Resources, not at Department of Public Utilities, not at DPU, at Department of Energy Resources. They created this council that sets a budget for energy efficiency on a 3-year rolling cycle, if I remember correctly. And once that budget is set, it is an automatic charge on your gas and electric bill. There is no debate at DPU, and the AG's office cannot argue to bring it down. This is
See,
a
that
hundred.
has not been talked about. That has flown right under the radar with this whole discussion.
Because no one knows how it works. You have to be around to know how it works. So one of the big changes in 2008 was they added an energy efficiency charge to your natural gas bill. Like I said, prior to that, it was only on your electric bill. And as a result, the most recent approval of their budget, 3-year budget, has resulted in a spike of your natural gas bill on top of your normal usage because it's been very cold. Don't have to tell you guys about, cold.
So it takes more energy to sustain the same temperature in your house.
But as a result of an increased bill. So the DPUs and the governor has basically asked the two utility companies to reduce their charges by 10%, which means they're going to have to eat it. They're eating that charge because that's not going to reduce spending on mass save, which is the energy efficiency component charge.
So does there need to be a different revenue source for that mass save program?
Well, that means the legislature at some point need to have a strong discussion about reining in that program. Because I had already thought about this when I worked in the AG's office before I got to the legislature, when I worked utility and energies stuff, and it dawned on me very quickly this can get out of control very fast.
And here we are, yeah.
And here we are. And honestly, between you and me and the audience, there needs to be a full accounting of that, of what's going on over there. It needs an external you need to hire an external private auditor to go through and see what's happening. And the AG's office should be demanding even though they do have a seat in the council, which they always lose the vote because it's only one seat, should be demanding greater transparency about where the funds are, who's receiving these contracts, and whether or not there's actually a value being generated.
Yes, because we, you and I both heard stories of unscrupulous contractors abusing the system, and not providing value for the dollar.
Yeah, and I'm a very big proponent of energy reduction, right? I'm a very proponent of people trying to, regulate their heat, regulate their lighting, close your shades, get better windows. If you can't afford that, look at trying to figure out how to, get better shades, for example, to keep the cold out and warm
Yeah.
in. I mean, very big proponent of that, at home, turn your thermostat down. There's Google Home. You could control your temperature outside your house.
Right.
Oh, things like that to try to, reduce consumption. But I mean, this is a little bit clearly out of control at some level. And, once committees are formed, which we'll find out in about an hour and 15 minutes, it'll be up to whomever's in that committee to make some decisions, particularly telecom, utilities, energy, whether they're going to address this issue or not. And I can't tell you what's going to happen yet because I don't know who's doing what over here yet.
Right. I understand. I did notice that, looking at the MassSave website, and the rebates now are only offered for heat pumps, not for more energy efficient fossil fuel heating systems.
That was correct. That was a Senate initiative. There's a compromise from two climate bills ago.
Okay.
That was a hard push by the Senate to do that. So I don't want to get to names, but certain advocacy groups had pushed to no longer allow fossil fuels, or particularly natural gas, to get short-term loans at low interest rates with certain banks. For you to replace your heating system, they want you to go to a heat pump instead. We discussed before, a heat pump is purely electrically generated. It puts stress in the electrical system. And people found out it's not cheap to do, and it's not easy to do. It's not as simple as it looks. But
Right.
that was a Senate initiative, and unfortunately, unfortunately, depending on how you want to look at it, depending what side of the fence you're on, as part of compromise of the climate bill 2 years ago between the House and Senate, they took up the natural gas and replaced those with heat pumps, which then really narrows the audience who can afford it. But also, heat pumps are significantly higher cost.
Right. Yes, exactly. And if, I mean, if you've just replaced your fossil fuel system, you're not going to be inclined to throw that out and go to a heat pump system.
Oh, that's a scenario in my case. We replaced we went to central air right before COVID. And then we went to natural gas about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
This furnace is good for 30 years.
Right, exactly. So why would you, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and we spent significant money to do that. So we have a very old, very, very old duct system, which then added an additional cost in trying to make the new system fit inside the existing duct system, which was
Right.
a sheet metal worker's nightmare for a little bit.
Yeah.
We're very thankful for that being done. So, I mean, people shouldn't just jump into the best and the brightest thing without considering the long-term cost to you and also how it changes the value of your home.
That too. Yes, good point. Absolutely. All right. So, some changes need to be made there for sure.
Yeah, I'm aware of it. We've got some constituent inquiries in here trying to explain that on paper. That's because we like to write back to people. Is a little more nuanced trying to write than it is to be explained in a thunder just right now.
Yeah, well, all people see is the bottom line, and they want that fixed.
Oh yeah, I
Yeah.
have a natural gas heating system. I am feeling your pain because yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just hope it gets warmer quicker.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I don't have a gas stove, however, nor a gas dryer. So I still run electric on both. So for those who have gas stoves, I mean, obviously this still will impact you, or you have a gas dryer, this will still impact you regarding your bill. And there's only so much demand reduction you can do on things like cooking.
That's right. You still need to wash your clothes and cook your food and
Yeah, exactly. And you can get sometimes a little bit of a lower electrical bill on washing clothes after 9 p.m., for example. It won't
Oh,
be a
that's true. Yeah.
Not a massive savings, but you can save a few fractions of a penny, which adds up over long periods of time.
Right, exactly. Yep. Okay. What's coming up in the district, Tacky?
Well, St. Patrick's Day is coming up at some point, right? March is
Yes,
around the
yes.
corner. So yeah, a few things going on. I have to actually open my calendar to look what's going on, to be frank with you.
Oh, okay. All right. I
And,
just interviewed folks from Save the Harbor, Save the Bay. They're having their big fundraiser splash coming up on Sunday, and then the Better Beaches program will kick off soon after that. So I know, are you still on the Beaches Commission?
as far as I'm aware, I am.
Okay.
The speaker's not removed me yet.
Okay.
If someone else wants to do it, I'm already with my stick through, so I would not be personally offended. I have a lot of other things to do, including the Asian caucus and whatever the next chair shall be, plus obviously constituent services and trying to get as many events I can in the city of Quincy as opposed to outside the city. But some of you may not be aware when it comes to especially Asian Americans, there's not a lot of us that are elected. So, I do get requests to leave Quincy to spend some time with some other folks listening to their concerns as well.
Yeah.
It is no joke. I mean, I do stay in the city a lot.
Yeah,
And,
well, that your whole district is in the city, so that makes sense.
well, I'm also a homebody.
Oh,
So
that too. Yeah.
anytime I go somewhere else, it's always like, I left Quincy. And even my colleagues are like, why are you here? They've accepted the fact that I'm just a homebody.
It reminded me to ask you about the process of dredging Quincy Bay. I know you're working on that.
Yeah, we have some real cash money and some bonds, and the maid in my office has been keeping tabs on chasing it down and working with the city regarding where we are. Some of it's opera money, some of it's straight cash from surplus, some of it is straight bond money. It's been a real cobbling together of cash. But obviously, we want to ensure that all this money is used for dredging and not anything else.
Sure.
And but the money won't be released until we reach a stage where the city's ready to go. I did bring up this up to DCR Commissioner Arrigo, and Brian is aware of it. But the problem is the State Division of Waterways doesn't appear to be functioning because I don't think there's anybody working there. So it's very confusing where that front is. But it was something we've been emphasizing to the Commissioner of DCR because that's under the purview regarding waterway access. And previous government administration does not care about the water, despite the fact we're a coastal city.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it is very fascinating that we're a coastal city, but also a coastal state. And other than trying to do environmental issues, past governors have zero interest in waterways.
Interesting. Okay. They really ought to. It could be a major economic driver.
It is because recreational boating and recreational fishing is a big part of our economy. And, dredging for giant cargo ships. Yeah, it's part of our economy, but it doesn't reflect our entire navigable waterways.
The lieutenant governor is the former mayor of Salem on the coast, so she's well aware of the importance, certainly, of a waterway access.
Agreed. And she does chair the Seaport Advisory Council, which provides grant funding for economic development along the water. But ultimately, the governor is Governor Gavel Healey runs the place. So it's getting there. The administration interested in the matter to try to, push these issues forward.
Okay. Well, I mean, the MBTA is certainly interested in expanding ferry service. Matter of fact, they just announced the changes to the Quincy ferry, the Winthrop, Quincy ferry, and adding service, so weekend service, which is kind of nice, and direct service to Boston from Quincy.
Yeah, it won't be part of the route that includes Winthrop, which actually significantly cuts down your time from Quincy to Boston. Obviously, this program that Bruce Ayers and John Keane has been working on for a very long time. We have enough data to show when it is most efficient to maximize ridership. And it's definitely shown that there is ridership in Quincy and they go to Boston. And just that fact alone would justify more service at that level and expanded service. So obviously, I do encourage people that like to ride a boat. I don't like being on a boat. Well, no, I'm afraid of the water.
We know, we know.
And this is not a hidden fact. But, I mean, yeah, we definitely encourage return transportation. And frankly, the more residents that, not just in Quincy, but in the region, utilize that ferry service, the more likely you will keep the ferry service.
Right. Marina Bay Ferry, that's what I was trying to think of. So it's mbferry.com is their website, and the schedule's already up there. So folks should check it out.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Again, you don't use it, you lose it.
Correct. Anything else we should talk about today?
Well, let me just go back to the rules and do a little touch on, because I'll go to a repeat for something we did in November.
Okay.
The rules actually includes a provision to allow the state auditor to pick the independent auditor for the House. This is something that's come up a few times since we passed that rule, and it's a rule that's going to still be in the House rules, that if the auditor would like to pick our auditor that the House would pay for, they would do that. And it'll be a financial audit. One of the challenges we have with the state auditor is that she's talking about everything but the financial audit. And I think this is the part that's really causing confusion in the public. Because when you hear it talk, she wants to go after everything and anything. And we saw most recently she did an audit of non-disclosure agreements. That is not in the purview of the auditor. The auditor does financial audits, not public policy audits. And that's the kind of the dilemma we're facing here. So you do not have an impartial auditor. Hiring a third-party auditor is independent. And if you let the auditor pick that, you can't say that we didn't pick that, that we manipulated the bid process for the auditor. She can run the bid process and choose the auditor for us if she so desires. If she doesn't want to do it, that's fine too. But we give her the option to do it to finance our books. And whatever audit comes up, we've made available to the public on a financial level. But if you look at her, or anything she's pointing out, it is increasingly politicized as opposed to addressing the narrowness of her job. And most recently, she got into another political fray regarding the MBTA zoning issue with communities which lost that lawsuit that the Attorney General defended MBTA community zoning. And she's now used the office unfunded mandate, calling it an unfunded mandate. But that was the argument that was made at the SJC, which was rejected by the SJC, which allowed the mandate to stand. So she's creating a bit of muddled water here by putting out reports, spending your taxpayer money, by the way, on honestly on SJC ruling that she can't change.
The ballot question that passed, referring to the audit, did that approve a financial audit only, or a policy audit, or both? Or, what
Statute.
did the ballot question actually approve?
The ballot question approved adding a financial audit pursuant to U.S. government standards to do that. However, we've talked before, and the AG has sent advisories telling everyone there's a potential conflict of interest regarding implementation because the legislative branch legislates, the executive branch execute, and the state auditor is executive branch. You don't tell us, we tell you, because that's how the constitutional works. The power of the people lies within the legislative branch because we're elected every 2 years, she's elected every 4 years. So it is very unusual to see an executive branch try to exert herself by state law inside the separation of powers,
Okay.
of which she herself supported, financed the ballot question, which none of us ever seen before. And we're anticipating she won't make her audits. She's required to audit one third of everything every cycle, 2 year cycle. And that's your tax dollars too. And so she's pursuing things that are outside the purview of the regular auditing. And we're waiting to see if she actually makes her time, whether she's going to make her legal responsibilities the legislature has instructed her. So wait and see.
Okay. As you're well aware, it's optically, at least, folks are saying the legislature's trying to hide things, and it's a cover up, and this, just let her do what the people voted for.
Agreed. You're right. The optics issue is out there. People are getting very confused. I've noticed reading emails and from other folks about what an audit actually is. When I say the word audit, most people think it's a financial audit. She said everything but that. And when we offered the opportunity for her to choose our auditor, if she so desires, that's an outside auditor, she balked and said she wants to do it herself. But at no point did she say the word financial audit. Talk about everything else. So this is actually quite an interesting constitutional dilemma at our level regarding the separation of powers. But also, there's accountability for the state auditor that needs to be had. And the legislature is going to have some questions if she can't do her job. which she, by the way, have avoided talking about, and quite frankly, her supporters and whatnot, is a wonderful distraction. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
And what's going on in the Washington, D.C. area?
Yeah, talk about everything about the job you're supposed to be doing. Because WBUR has already reported that she's behind schedule. This
Oh, is
is
that right?
not a legislative creation. It's already been they already looked WBR is already looking into her regarding her whether she can make her deadlines.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
We're watching intently as well whether she's
Yeah.
going to make her deadlines. So, mind you, she's also the highest paid. I think she's the highest paid elected official at the moment.
Higher than the governor?
Higher than the governor, higher than any person in the legislature, higher than the governor, the AG. Yeah, she's the highest paid elected official.
All right, there you go. You got your 2 cents in, Tacky.
No, at this moment, just at this moment, I'm sure there might be another higher paid elected official, which we will not do commentary on right now.
Okay.
But currently, yes, she is the highest paid elected official in the state of Massachusetts, is my understanding.
Yeah. All right. We're at the end of
Probably
the
has.
year.
Which has the most narrow job in government, by the way.
There you go. Off your soapbox now.
In case so you are listening, I know people listening probably weren't aware of that. That yeah, probably was not aware of that it, because the Boston Globe, when they went after our salaries, discreetly left her out.
No, I was not aware of that either. Yeah.
Yeah, we were noticing that in our thing. We always get killed on that. I mean, this is the political consequence of life. I mean. I could get paid 5 cents and you still kick the crap out of me. It's just the nature of it. I'm okay with it. I mean, I get it. But when the Globe literally leaves her out, it's
Yeah,
something.
that's just a blatant a blatant negative impact, yeah.
And when you see things like Deb Goldberg is one of the highest paid state treasurers in the country, that doesn't mean she's the highest paid state elected. The Globe's been doing these little subtle words to give you the false impression of, if you read quickly, this false impression about who is the highest paid. And the Globe, it deliberately left her at the end of Zoglio, which I find
Yeah.
appalling personally.
Yeah, that is not great reporting for sure. Yeah.
No, it's very appalling because it's not full transparency by the Globe about what's going on.
Okay. Can we call you, come see you, email you?
Well, we're still here in room 42 for now. We'll find out next week if I'm not in room 42.
Okay.
This is one of the consequences of assignments. When assignments change, you lose your space. So right now, our phone number is still 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. I know my email will not change, which is tacky.chan@emailhouse.gov. My Facebook is still State Representative Tacky Chan. At Tacky Chan is our X account. MALegislature.gov, MALegislature.gov, that will not change. So you can monitor the progress in our bills and sessions and hearings as we're getting ready to roll. And our attendance rate, it will be published online. So you can check who showed up and who did not for the hearings. And we'll actually be also publishing roll call votes of the committees. Down the road as well, which is actually a significant change. Polling is not a roll call. Polling is gauging the sentiment of the members or whether or not there is sufficient support to pass something. Roll call is a roll call. Very
Yep.
different people, very different words, but people tend to conflate them as the same thing. And then, we have tackychin.org. People use it as a contact page. Very happy people who actually go look at that page. There are resources on that page that you don't need me for. You can call various social services agencies and other government offices off that page. We will try to keep updating that the best we can. And of course, me and Joe here every week or every 2 weeks will provide you some insight of what's going on. And sometimes Tacky has a bone to pick. This is very therapeutic, by the way, as you may guess. About my personal opinions in the matter, but it's not ungrounded. I've been around. I do pay attention. I do actually try to keep myself educated. And we're happy to talk about state, local, well, mostly state, and sometimes some federal stuff and international news. And if you have any specific questions, please email Joe at QATV, and he'll be happy to try to figure out how to work it into a future program because I don't know what Joe's going to ask me.
That's right. Sometimes even I don't know, Jackie.
That is true. As people have noted, the free-flowing nature of this and tacky trying to play Ajahn Mee very so
Yeah,
often.
it's the nature of it. It's a true nature of a podcast, I think. You know, it makes it a true podcast.
Yeah, and remind people it's tax season. Remind people frauds are up. Email fraud, telephone fraud, people pretend to be government threatening you. With the current environment we have in politics, I think the frauds are going to go up significantly. Government does not telephone or email you for money ever. We send letters. If you don't trust the letter, call one of us, call the congressman's office, call my office. We're very happy to try to get this verified if it's real or not with the various state agencies, or you call the congressman's office for federal agencies to get verification if it's real or not. So, please be aware that the scams are out there regarding deportation, unpayment of taxes, kidnapping of a relative, kidnapping your pet. Yeah, there's a lot of them. And because of the nature of the internet, I've been getting text scams, people claiming who they know I am, which they do not. And also, you're getting these scams regarding paying the Easy Pass, which is completely scammed because the Easy Pass is tied to your credit card account, of which you can log into or visit the office in Framingham. Framingham? No, Natick. I think no Framingham.
Natick, it's Natick, yeah.
Natick. Yeah, you can visit the office in Natick. So, just be aware they're getting text messages, telephones, voicemails, emails, social media posts. I mean, they're coming at you, WhatsApp, WeChat, Signal. They're coming for you. So everyone, please be very careful with this tax season. The scammers are coming up full force this year. The political environment makes it even better fodder for putting fear into people about that. Please, 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 be concerned. Congress, contact your congressman's office, your senator's office with federal issues. You see us coming from the state, please do contact us and we're happy to get a verification on that, whether or not it's real or not. So, that's kind of my last message. And, we'll be with the speaker on Friday in QATV to talk about the senior circuit tax break. So we can talk about that next week and some tax changes in this cycle, which I think maybe not all, but let me think many of you will benefit from.
Okay, I look forward to that. Thanks so much, Jackie.
Thank you, Joe.